This may be one of the most famous rock songs in history. A 1963 recording of the Kingsmen doing Louie Louie, which became hugely popular, by my count, at least six different times in the last four decades. The guy who's playing the drums on that song and other tunes by the Kingsmen is Dick Peterson, who has come out with a book called Louie Louie, Me Gotta Go Now, and I've invited him to come on the show and talk about that brief flirtation with fame that started when he was in his teen years and is continuing to even this day. It's nice to have you on here this afternoon. Let's talk a little bit about this, the history of this song. How old were you when you recorded that?
17 years old when that thing was recorded.
17 years old, and it's you. It's you and your four buddies in Portland, Oregon, right?
Yeah. What happened was Louie Louie was not meant to be a record. It was recorded to get a job on a cruise ship for the summer, and the cruise line didn't like it, but it found its way onto the airwaves, due mostly in part to Arnie Wubu Ginsberg in Boston, who was on a quest to find the worst record ever recorded. It is to him. And he started playing it, and the kids voted it in every night as the worst recording. And, you know, if you hear something long enough, you like it.
Now, how did it end up going from something you recorded as an audition for a cruise ship to actually ending up in some DJ's hands?
You know, Jerry Dennen, a local producer, sent it back to Arnie. He had met him at one of the conferences and said, I'll send you, you know, one of my latest productions, and sent it to him. And he thought that was just great, fit right in with his M.O. So, you know, he was the one that drove it onto a record label because kids wanted to buy it. They listened to it so much that it was winning the worst record contest so much they wanted to buy it.
Now, we're going to talk about the infamy of the song and the FBI and J. Edgar Hoover and their involvement in this in just a second. But I'm curious about the fame that comes with a song that is kind of an unintentional hit like that. Once it gets on the radio and they start making these demands, somebody figures out who you guys are and discovers you again, right?
Yeah, it was crazy because, you know, as soon as the record hit Indiana and they couldn't understand any of the lyrics and kids wanted to sing along with it, they thought it was dirty. And, boy, within 2 weeks of the banning in Indiana, it was being banned across the country as a song containing obscene lyrics. And the FBI, the FCC got involved, and so did William Morris. They saw the opportunity and got a hold of us and booked a national tour, and we were out on the road within 2 weeks of the banning.
Okay, so it wasn't until it got banned that somebody finally figured out who you guys were and dug you up out of Portland?
Exactly.
And then what happened? Again, we'll get to the legal part of it. I'm curious, though, about, okay, they find you, and William Morris is representing you. How do you go from that to opening for the Rolling Stones?
Well, that took about, 6 to 8 months. Initially, we went on our own tour for about 13 weeks, just doing dance halls and stuff. And while on that tour, we were offered the opening for a summer tour for the Beach Boys. And so we went out with them for a 40-day summer tour when they released All Summer Long album. And or Endless Summer, it was called. And so we were out with them. If you can imagine, 19 guys in a Greyhound bus traveling across the country for 2.5 months. It was pretty fun.
Wow. I bet it was, particularly with the prototypical summertime band, the Beach Boys. You're traveling all summer long. Were you playing beaches anywhere?
No, we were playing ballparks and coliseums and great big venues. Our first tour, mostly we played, you know, 1,000 to 5,000 people. But when we went out with the Beach Boys, we were playing from 15 to 25,000 people a night.
Wow. And what was the rest of your set made up of? I'll be honest with you, that's the only song by the Kingsmen I've ever heard.
Well, we had four really big records. Money and Little Latin Loopy Lou and Jolly Green Giant was, you know, a top four record for us. And it was just a sort of a classic comedy record. It was actually recorded as a joke for our record company, and they didn't get the joke. They put it out, and it went top five. But we had 9 albums, and we did all kinds of television shows. We were in a beach party movie with Annette and Frankie, and we were just having a blast for about 5 years until the psychedelic period happened.
Was that How to Stuff a Wild Bikini?
It was.
That's
Mickey Rooney, Dwayne Hickman, Elizabeth Montgomery, Buster Keaton. Listen to all those people, and it was just a beach party movie.
Yeah, a classic of 60s camp, and to see you guys in there is just perfect. In fact, I think that movie was, and your part in it, was the inspiration for a scene in Tom Hanks's movie, That Thing You Do.
Exactly. If it wasn't, it was pretty darn close.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk now about the legal aspect of this. Once the song started seemingly causing trouble because some people couldn't understand the lyrics and thought that there was some dirty stuff in there, dirty by 60s standards, of course. Was it radio stations that started banning it on their own, or were there the 60s versions of special interest groups that started making an uproar?
Hey, the radio stations were all over playing it. They loved it. You know, any time rock and roll can be controversial, they were playing the heck out of it.
Yep.
And the banning was really due to the FCC and the FBI, and the states were banning it individually. You know, Michigan, they had their FBI and FCC, and the FCC would ban it from the airwaves, but it didn't matter because WLS in Chicago, which was a 50,000 watt clear channel radio station, was beamed all over the place. You couldn't keep it off their air. So no, it was just ladies' aid societies and church groups that were all upset because they couldn't understand any of it.
And J. Edgar Hoover himself got involved.
Yeah, he personally directed the investigation, and he'd send agents out to our shows, and they'd be standing by the speaker cabinets, sticking out like a sore thumb. You know, you'd have kids in bell-bottom pants and hip-huggers, and then you'd have guys in gray flannel suits standing by the speakers writing down every word you'd say, trying to decipher just what kind of band this was.
Now, were
they... 18 months! 18 months they listened to it, and us. And they finally, when they went to the FCC with their finding, the FCC said, well, you guys have so many different versions, you can't even decide what it says. So we're going to call it unintelligible at any speed and lift all the bans. And they did, and it really took off.
It's funny because the controversy was making it popular and holding it back at the same time. And then once they wrote that phrase, that classic phrase, unintelligible at any speed, because in those days they would slow down the record and listen to it. And maybe if we play it faster, we'll hear something in there. So in the midst of all of that, Dick, did you guys, in any performances, actually change the lyrics to something dirty?
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. I can't say no. Actually, every single time that it's performed, I sing something differently. In the book, I tell the story of how I ended up having to go up front and sing the song because the guy that actually sang the record left the band about 9 months before it was banned, and I was the only one that could sound that horrible. And you know, that was the first time ever that the Kingsmen did Louie Louie as a vocal. Before that, it was always performed as an instrumental. But, you know, it was a Jamaican love song with Jamaican kind of lyrics, and this was an audition tape for a Caribbean cruise, and so it was thought, since they wanted a vocal band, it should be sung. And that was the first time, and so there were vocal mistakes. You know, Jack came in the wrong place right after the guitar solo. You can hear all the mistakes in it, but it was only supposed to be an audition tape, and no one was going to listen to it over and over and over. They were just going to listen to it once and let us know if we had the job.
That is so funny. All right, now, for people who may not know, you talk about the Jamaican original. The song was written not by the Kingsmen, but by a guy named Richard Berry, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. He wrote it back in 56.
I've got a recording of him doing the song. Listen. Lyrics are perfectly intelligible. They don't make a lot of sense, but you can understand them. How come when you guys did it?
That's far too pretty.
That's too pretty.
Louie Louie is not a song where people, you know, that's the second most recorded song in history, next to Yesterday. But what people don't understand or what they can't get their arms around is it's not a great song. It was just a great record by the Kingsmen because you couldn't understand it. It's that jungle animal thing that goes on in the record that made the record so popular, really not the song. I mean, Andy Williams singing Louie Louie kind of doesn't do it.
No, you're absolutely right. Give me cut five on there for just a sample of what it sounded like. We have a couple of different cover versions of it. Go ahead, Kevin. This is what Dick is talking about.
How about that?
Listen to this version. This sounds like your record slowed down.
They don't have enough beer in them yet. Oh, that's so sweet.
And then at the other end of the spectrum are people who decided you guys didn't play it fast enough, and that's how you end up with a group called the Sonics. And I will tell you, and we'll get back to another story from you. I just got to play one more version of this because it became a little bit famous when it was used in the movie The Naked Gun with Leslie Nielsen. This is the Rice University Marching Owl Band. And it's actually become a marching band standard, hasn't it?
Absolutely. It's played, you know, we license that baby all over the place. And it is played almost at every football game, the NCAA basketball, NFL football. You know, the Mariners play it every seventh inning stretch in their home games. But, you know, we had a chance to go to Rice University and actually play a halftime show with them and sing while they played Louie Louie, and it was really fun.
Oh, I bet it was. Now, you said
it was just insane.
You said that you've licensed it. Does that mean that you somehow own the rights to the song?
Well, we don't own the publishing, but we own all of our records. We spent 9 years in court, and you can imagine how many millions of dollars that cost us.
Wow.
To get back the rights because we were not being paid any royalties. We hadn't been paid any royalties for 30 years, and so we sued and won rescission. It went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, but we prevailed, and even though it broke all of us, you know, if another act is not being paid a royalty now for about $5,000, you can just go in and state our case, and you win ownership of your masters. You don't get royalties. You're actually the one that licenses it.
Gotcha. All right, now let's get one thing definitively on the record here. I heard that the reason that original recording of yours from 1963 wasn't such great quality was because when you did it in like a basement, and the microphone was taped to the ceiling of the basement, and it was just the best you could do with the minimal technology you had at the time. Is that true?
Well, the last part was true. However, it wasn't in a basement. It was in an industrial recording studio. The guy did voiceovers. He didn't really record records. And the microphone was just placed above the band. And he had the attitude that if you wanted something louder, just move it closer to the microphone. If you want it softer, move it away from the microphone. So it kind of turned out that everything was louder than everything else and captured some magic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, congratulations on being able to keep this thing going for more than four decades and turn it into, you know, virtually an industry unto itself. And the book that Dick has written about all of these adventures and many more that we haven't gotten here today, I particularly didn't want to get into some of the incidents with the Rolling Stones on the road, but they're captured in a book called Louie Louie, Me Gotta Go Now. Dick Peterson, the drummer for the Kingsmen, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, and you can, you know, have your listeners jump on the internet and they can buy the book. It's so new, it's really not in many stores, but you can jump on and go to thelouiebook.com.
Thelouiebook.com, and I'll also put a link to it on my website, harrisonline.com.
Oh, thanks so much. That's just terrific. It's been a lot of fun.
My pleasure. Thanks, Dick.